Books with Aaron, Polly, Wayne, and Andrew. I'm Aaron.
This is Paul.
This is Wayne.
I'm Andrew.
Well, guys, I'm glad that we can all get together for our annual podcast recording.
Well, yeah, I'm sitting outside right next to the smoker preparing, getting all the meats prepared for the holiday.
Very good. Very good.
Oh. I must have misplaced my invite.
Oh, well, I knew you had brand new puppies. I thought it'd be a little inconsiderate of me to invite you to an out-of-state event with your brand new
puppies. Puppies like smoked meat also.
They do. They definitely do.
I don't know if they like the car drive here, but they do like smoked meats for sure.
They do not like car drives. I don't even like car drives anymore.
What are you smoking, Andrew?
Oh, got some ribs that prepared, got a nice rub on them. Beef. And then, you know, I've got one of the little Bluetooth, I'm actually not sitting by it, but I've got one of the little Bluetooth thermometers so I can watch it from my phone. Yeah. Keep an eye on it. Yeah, yeah.
Electric smoker or wood smoker?
So what are you guys doing for the Memorial Day holiday?
My plan is to do a lot of work in the garden. This is kind of my last weekend to plant before it gets ridiculously hot, and grill and watch movies, and that's about it.
Yeah, so for me, I have my mom's asked me to go put flowers on my dad and brother's grave for Memorial Day. Mm-hmm. Then I need to pick up meat so I can do my own grilling on Monday. But my big weekend plans is I have a new sectional couch being delivered on Wednesday and the old being taken out. Well, The new is going to take up that whole wall. So I have a bookshelf I need to move, and I basically need to clean and redo the entire living room so the old furniture, a couch and a chair, can be taken out and removed and the new be brought in and assembled, which also means finding out what the cats have dragged behind the couch.
This all sounds curiously like work.
Right.
It does.
Yeah. I don't care for it.
I'm sorry, Wayne. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it actually sounds like a lot of work.
Yeah, I don't care for that.
Yeah. But Paul, please tell us you're not working this weekend.
I am not. I shouldn't say not working. I'm continuing to puppy proof the house because, you know, we thought we had, now they're here and they're uncovering all the things we didn't.
You know, I think the thing to remember, Paul, is puppies get to think about being puppies 24/7.
Yeah.
You know, are thinking about the puppy problem from the outside. They're inside the problem. You know, they're chaos machines, Paul. That's what they do. So it's always true. A losing battle. It's always defensive. You know, you think it's a puppy. You know, I'm smarter than the puppy. You are not. You are not smarter than the puppy.
No.
That's that is from this man's experience. I'm just telling you, you are not smarter than the puppy.
Unlike me, you don't want to get a new couch because they might eat it.
Yeah, and you've got two of them. So they can hunt you in packs, Paul.
Yeah, you can't even double team them, Paul. You can't even double team them. You can only play man-to-man with these puppies.
That's true. I'm learning quickly, very quickly.
but they are adorable. I love the pictures. They're adorable puppies.
Don't show fear, Paul. Don't show fear.
No, all the time. All
they
I do
smell
is
smell fear.
They're smelling it. Well, gentlemen, it's before the puppies, though. Prior to Puppygeddon, I did watch some TV. I was able to actually enjoy a couple of episodes of television. I was able to finish off the most recent season of Daredevil: Born Again. I was able to watch Punisher: One Last Kill, and all that's happened since the last time we recorded.
So, Paul, Andrew, did you finish Daredevil: Born Again, or have you even started?
No, but you can. You can go ahead and ruin it. I'm currently catching up on Star Wars stuff on Disney before I go into superhero stuff on Disney.
See, I wasn't going to jump into it anyway because I've actually never seen any Daredevil on Netflix, like the old
the original.
Yeah, the original Netflix Daredevil. I never saw it, and I never finished the season of the season of Daredevil that had Punisher in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, season two.
Yeah. And but so I wasn't going to jump to it anyway, but someone reached out to me this week and said, you know, that if I'm not in a great place, I probably shouldn't watch it because it starts off with a dog getting killed. And
you're talking about Punisher.
Yeah. Yeah, Punisher. And deals heavily with mental health crisis.
Yeah, I mean, so, that's a fair assessment of what happens in Punisher One Last Kill.
Yep, so I did not watch it.
So Daredevil then, I gotta tell you, I thought there were some highs and lows this season, but overall, I didn't see the point of it.
Other really? Other
than to get us to the end to start the third season, which I feel like they've got some special intent for. I was bored with all of the Fisk conflict, you know, with the head-to-head Daredevil stuff. I feel like we've seen all that before, you know, and none of it felt fresh to me. And I just, don't get me wrong, there were moments that I thought were really well done, but there was never a fight as good as the least fight in the Netflix series. I feel strongly about that, that the fight choreography was not there. And, you know, I felt like while I enjoyed having Karen on screen again, the conflict between her and Matt mid-season and beyond seemed pointless. If you're not going to do something about it, it seemed pointless. I got frustrated with it. I did not think that it ended well. And I felt like it resolved as it did with Fisk going off to live on his private island in exile was just sort of an excuse not for one of these two characters to die. You know, that we're going to send him to the island. And I don't understand why Matt was pushing for, okay, we'll both leave New York. You leave New York, I'll leave New York. Right. And I'm like, why is that even a conversation? You know, why do you need to leave New York? You know, I got frustrated with the show. And like I said, there were some episodes I enjoyed, but I got, as a whole, it was frustrating.
Yeah, I mean, I will say I actually enjoyed the season. I think there were definitely some scenes or some moments in it where they really had some strong tension. I think the episode where there is a riot at the Capitol, where Fisk and Matt are having their battle in the basement, and you know, you've got Karen kind of dealing with the riot up top. And then, you know, the doctor, you know, Matt's ex-girlfriend had her, you know, moment in that episode where she's starting to kind of become Muse herself. I thought it was good. I mean, I enjoyed the season. I do feel like, and, you know, in retrospect, I think it was, even though the plan changed, you know, this was originally announced as like one 18 episode season. Right. I think when it was originally announced, these first two seasons feel very much as if they are one season.
Mm-hmm.
It does feel like I'm ready for something else from the show.
Yeah.
Than Matt versus Fisk, because, you know, in the Netflix show, we had the Hand, you know, and Elektra. At least we had a little bit of break from the Matt Fisk story. But these past two seasons have basically just been telling one continuous story of Matt and Fisk and the mayor thing. And don't get me wrong, I mean, I feel like they saved a lot for the last three episodes, character deaths and things like that. Like the second half of the season, I feel, was better than the first half.
Right.
But overall, I will say, I feel like it's a good show. It, even though these two seasons never matched the heights of the Netflix show, I feel like it was a worthy enough successor. And, you know, where things leave off in this season, I feel will lead to a very interesting season three that embraces all of the Netflix continuity and characters. I mean, I'm trying not to spoil too much, even though it's all online, right? That the Defenders are coming back and all that. You know, so I'm curious to see what they do in season three, because I'm hopeful that we will get some new story threads, right? That even though I'm pretty sure both Matt and Fisk, I mean, we know Matt's coming back, but I'm pretty sure Fisk is coming back, that he's not the main guy again. I feel like we're going to maybe get some different plot threads. So I'm looking forward to season three. I think, like I said, season one and two may be a bit bloated, but overall, I think it was a good watch.
I think that you know, I think the season would have been stronger, and I hate to say this, without Jessica Jones and without the Luke Cage cameo at the end of the season. I really think that that we kind of wasted some time without really getting to spend some time with Jessica Jones. I don't see a point in bringing her in. And she really didn't serve the story all that much that some other character couldn't have, you know, worked on, you know?
Yeah. It was mostly set up for season three, right?
It was sizzle, you know, but I think you could have set up season three without, you know, fanboying and bringing in Kristen Ritter and then, you know, Luke Cage at the end of it. But it is what it is. Now, Punisher One Last Kill.
Yeah, so that came out the very next week, right? We had Punisher One Last Kill released as kind of, it is a one-shot. So Marvel's had a couple of these one-shots.
Well, they've had three. So, you know, and it's their, what are they calling that? Their special...
presentation, something like
special
that.
Special presentation, that's what it is, special presentation. Yeah.
So it was Rebel High Night, this one, and, oh, the Guardians of the Galaxy Holiday Special. That's
correct,
right.
Correct. And I got to tell you, they're not doing enough of this. Because while I feel like Punisher One Last Kill's a mixed bag, and we'll talk about that in just a second, I think overall I'm glad they did it. If for nothing else than the Judith Light performance, because I thought Judith Light was amazing. And
yeah, I was like, whoa, Judith Light.
Well, at first I went, fucking Judith Light, you know, like, who's the boss?
That's random.
You know,
yeah, she's the boss. Now we know.
Yeah. And I wish that they had come up with a line in the, you know, who's the boss? I'm the boss, you know.
You thought you know who the boss was, but it's me.
But, you know, maybe that would be a little too meta, but her performance was brilliant. I loved every moment she was on the screen, just lit up. But I'll tell you, the script screams that the lead actor wrote it.
You could tell Bernthal wrote that thing. I'm like, whoa, this is terrible.
Yeah, it's awful, and it's all just gratuitous of him emoting at, and I just thought that was wasteful. I enjoyed the action. I thought it was
enjoyed
a lot
the action.
Of,
you know, I will say, the action was the strong piece. But I'm going to go on record. Because Wayne, you had said, you know, about the dog thing happening. Yes, the dog thing happening. It is very, very horrible, but that's kind of the point. It happens off screen. So, I mean, it's upsetting, but not in a way that's, you don't see it. But on the flip side, this was a piece of shit.
It was.
To your point about the writing was so bad that the Punisher lives in this area of New York City that is so bad that even the cops who show up to the area get beat up. And I'm like, that's not a thing.
Yeah.
That's not a thing in the real world where, like, a cop can drive into a neighborhood and get flame bombed in the middle of the day and no one does anything about it. In New York City, of all places, with all the superheroes.
Yeah. It's like a 1980s superhero movie, right? I mean,
it just felt so, like, out of reality and ridiculously over the top that I was like, I was instantly taken out of it at the beginning where, like, and this father and his family own a donut and coffee shop in this worst part of New York City. And they can walk to and from work every day and serve donuts and coffee. And it's fine. And they have customers, but somehow, like, rando old man walking down the street can't do so without his dog getting thrown in front of in front of a garbage truck. Like, you know, it's so ridiculously bad. To your point, very 80s. Like, I'd be fine if it was, you know, if it was, you know, 1984 and
it was like
starring Dolph Lundgren.
Yeah, you know, it was,
exactly.
Yeah, I mean, but what I enjoyed was very much the Judith Light stuff. What I hated was really everything with Frank Castle and his inner dialogue, you know, and all the crazy that he's got in his mind. And I'm just, you know, it's 45 minutes or so that I did not need other than the Judith Light bits. And I would have been happy to have those in 20-second reels on Instagram. Because the rest of it just kind of sucked. Other than, like, the action sequences were pretty good. Yeah. And I heard a lot of people bitching about the CG at the end of episode. It didn't bother me that much, and it's probably because the writing was so that you know, it just it didn't stand out as the most awful thing in the episode. But I do think it's worth watching for Judith. I stand by that it is thoroughly enjoyable for
Judith. There's a very solid like 20 minutes of action at the end without much to it. You know, no real story to it or anything that's worth watching. You know, they take a beat from The Raid, where, you know, he or Judge Dredd, or Dredd, I should say, the movie where basically the Punisher's in a building and all the bad guys are in the building and he has to get out of the building. And it's a well, like the action itself is well done.
But
out of a 50-minute episode, the it's about 20 minutes of good.
And basically, the action in this episode was better than anything in season 2 of Daredevil.
Yeah,
I mean, I just the action was terrific, and Barenthal's great at that stuff, you know. And you know, I love the whole, you know, he locked up all of his guns so he can only fight with the guns that he picks up on the guys that he takes down, right?
Yeah, that was cool,
and that was super cool. But now, you know, these special presentations that Marvel has done 3 of, I really wish that they would make these more frequent. And I wish that they would do them with characters that hadn't come to the MCU. I wish they would develop characters from other, you know, comic books and bring them into the MCU.
Because, you know, everybody out there has got some character that's their passion that you know, like, it's worth trying. Like, for example, give me a Darkhawk one.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like Darkhawk is prime for a one shot.
I would watch that. That's for sure.
And, you know, you could do, it would be a great way to bring in some of the lesser known Midnight Suns, you know, do a Damien Hellstrom, you know, wouldn't that be fun? Do a Brother Voodoo, you know.
Part of it is that they, these characters, they're holding them for the potential of something in the future. But like, unless you have a definitive plan, just do damn one shot.
That's right.
Right.
Well, and you sell it in the room and, you know, you let people come in and pitch you on these. It doesn't have to be a Kevin Feige, you know, conception. Let some people come in and pitch you and, you know, find the one that makes sense financially and, you know, find something that sounds interesting. And maybe that's going to be what spawns your next big thing. You know, you've got so many, they got so many different properties that they can play with that they're just letting sit on the shelf.
Yeah. I mean, I go back to that very first one, Aaron, the Werewolf by Night.
Yeah.
It wasn't great, but when Man-Thing showed up, I was cheering just to see the character on the screen.
Well, and you know, the great thing about Werewolf by Night is number one, that they, and you know, no one was begging by night. Show did it, and that's exactly what they should continue doing, and just see what sticks. Throw that, I'll see what sticks. But yeah, I'm underwhelmed by the current state of the MCU. I am looking forward to the Daredevil in storyline for season 3 because that is my favorite runs of Daredevil by Mr. Bendis. So looking forward to that.
I have so many shows I'm looking forward to right now because I finally gave in and got Apple TV. So
yes,
all of the sci-fi shows lined up.
Do you watch it on your Google phone just to stick it to Apple?
No, I watch it on my TV.
Ah, okay. that makes more sense.
Yeah, no, I've got the app on the TV. No, I have so many shows. Like first thing I did was I went through sci-fi and started building my wish list. And I have not started the major ones that I know once I start binging, they're going to take all my time. Like For All Mankind, I have not started yet because there's like 5 seasons and I'm excited for it. So I hold off on it. And I have watched the entire first seasons of Murderbot and Pluribus. And absolutely love them both. Murderbot was the big one that I got it for. It's a book series that I love, my wife loves, and so I wanted to see the TV adaption. They did an incredible job with it. Great story, done well on the screen. They make enough changes that I can't just predict everything that's going to happen. And then Pluribus was one of those. I kept seeing the previews for it, and I don't have any of you seen Pluribus?
I've seen the first episodes.
No, I'm not familiar with it.
Yeah, I kept seeing the preview of it, and the preview showed the basic concept is alien virus essentially makes humanity into a hive mind, but there are a couple people that are not, it didn't work on. The hive mind, though, is incredibly helpful, nonviolent in any way, and they want to do everything they can to make these people happy until they can find a way to make them part of them. So the main character is a bitter author who then has the entire world, trying to make her happy when she just wants them to leave her alone. It is funny, but it's a solid sci-fi story too. We binged the entire first season of it.
Yeah, I plan on finishing it. It's a Vince Gilligan joint. You know, he's the guy who did Breaking Bad.
And there are so many cameos throughout it, and some of them are more obvious than others. One of the ones that I didn't know at the time, it's set in Albuquerque. And at one point, someone says she recognizes someone as the mayor. That was actually the mayor of Albuquerque at that time. He did a cameo on the show.
I've not even seen a single episode of it. I'm curious. I'll check it out.
It's good. We started watching it, my wife and I, but she's not a genre person and didn't click for her. So it's something I'll be watching on my own. So.
Well, I was able to, you know, speaking of things we're watching, I was able to leave the dogs for a few hours.
Look at you.
Yeah, we tested it out. They did fine. Spoilers. They did fine. Because we went and saw Mandalorian and Grogu. You guys know I'm a big Star Wars guy, and so I was very psyched for this movie. I feel like I'm the only one.
I'm psyched.
I'm excited for it. I just haven't had a chance to see it yet.
Yeah. I think it's great. I mean, for what it's worth, it is very much just an extended episode of the TV show. There is nothing revelatory about it. There's no surprises that I would say that you're probably not already aware of from the trailers. But it is a fun, enjoyable movie. It is just good adventure, feel good. It does feel like maybe three episodes of the TV show put together with a bigger budget. But that's kind of what I expected. I will say, I feel like the crowds aren't there for it. I went and saw it opening night. It was not a sold out showing. There's no one clapping when the Lucasfilm logo came on the screen. You know, I feel like the excitement is not quite there for the movie. But I think that's appropriate. It's not the biggest Star Wars movie, right? It is very much, it's a Mandalorian and Grogu thing. But if you like the show, you'll like the movie. It is, like I said, an extended sequence of the show, but it's a lot of fun. Special effects are great.
I don't feel like it's got the marketing I would have expected. Like, Grogu is their cash cow.
Yeah.
But I haven't seen the marketing I would expect out of it. The one thing from the trailer that surprised me, and it left me wondering if there are flashbacks or if they ignore something or if it's actually a plot point, is the Razor Crest is in the trailer.
They do explain why the Razor Crest is back.
Okay.
It's not anything crazy, so it is not the same Razor Crest. That's all I'll say. I mean, it's not really much of a spoiler, but they do explain that, and for if you are someone who's a fan of kind of this Dave Filoni era of Star Wars, Rod of the Hutt, Jabba the Hutt's son is one of the main characters of the movie. And so anyone who watched the Clone Wars when it first started, in the very first episode, the very first movie of the Clone Wars featured Ahsoka and Anakin, I think, protecting Rod of the Hutt, who was from a kidnapping. That was literally the very first episode of Clone Wars. And so that character returns as one of the lead characters of the movie.
Well, I'm planning to see it Sunday evening.
It's worth watching, and it is worth seeing on the big screen. We because the closest IMAX is about a half hour away, and we didn't want to go too far, so we went to the theater down the street, and we saw it in like Laser Ultra, it's a big screen movie, you know, it's with big sound. And, you know, the music for the movie is done by Ludvig Göransson, who does the music for the TV show, also did the music for Sinners, and, you know, a bunch of Ryan Coogler movies. It is a fantastic score. Awesome. And I look forward to you know, listening to the score by itself. But it's a fun movie. That's what I'll say. You know, it is not like genre defining Star Wars. It's not gonna bring Star Wars back, you know, to what, you know, people I think want it to. I think it's probably in style for some reason to hate on Star Wars right now. But if you just want a fun Star Wars movie that reminds you of good, you know, fun Star Wars, that's what this is. And so I really enjoyed it. And I enjoyed it so much, I actually do plan to see it again in theaters.
Oh, wow.
And I will say, I haven't seen a Star Wars film more than once in theaters since The Force Awakens.
I
was just going to say, I originally planned to watch it on Friday, to go to the theaters and watch it Friday. I got distracted by a massage and did that.
So, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, massage. Yeah, you did. Mm-hmm. Distracted. Yeah, so I'll be seeing it twice as well. Not necessarily because I haven't seen it. Don't know how much I'll be into it. But I don't want to wait until my wife gets back from... She's going to be out of town for a couple weeks, so I don't wait till she gets back. So our deal is I can go see it by myself as long as when she gets back, I go see it with her as well. So I'm going to see it Sunday by myself, and then in a couple weeks when she gets back, we'll go see it again.
I will say the only bad thing that I would say about it, and I don't know if it's just because it was a little bit of like in my head, like, how long is this movie going to be? Because I have to take care of it. Because what if the dog pees in the crate? So I don't know if it was that, but there's a bit of a slowdown in the third arc or the third act of the movie, I would say, where it's like, this kind of slowed to a little bit of a crawl for like 10, 15 minutes. And I don't know if it's just me because it was in my head, but I'll find out next time I see it. But it is definitely worth seeing, and it's worth seeing on the big screen.
Right. Nice.
And well, Wayne, you'll like it because you were a Rebels fan. So Zeb is very much present through most of the movie as well.
Awesome. I saw him in the trailers.
Yeah, he's pretty significantly in it.
I don't think we've talked about this on the mics, but I saw Sheep Detectives 2 weeks ago.
Oh, how was that?
Highly recommended. Highly recommended. It was that movie is just fantastic. I literally no complaint. I love that movie. And we'll be seeing it again, not in theaters, but I'll see it again on the stream. But
awesome.
Good stuff. Everything that it promises in the trailer, very, very enjoyable. And if you enjoy those, you know, Agatha Christie mysteries, you know, movies, if you enjoy that kind of thing, it's very, very much feels like one of these people committed the crime. And let me walk you through how I just committed the crime. Really enjoyed it. And it's got talking sheep in it. It's all good stuff.
But Aaron, finally, you have been able to read Superman Spider-Man because it came out digitally this week. The first of the two-part, well, it's not even two parts, just two one-shots.
Right.
This one is the DC version written by Mark Waid with art by Jorge Jimenez on the main arc. And then you've got, you know, a bunch of short stories after it. And I don't remember if we really talked through this on the mic, but now that you've read it, it's worth talking about in more detail, I would say. So what did you think?
I think it's beautifully drawn. All of it. It's just a gorgeous book. I think the writing is strong for what it was. In that, you know, none of these stories are what you would, you know, they're sort of character studies. How would these characters respond to each other? But it's not really, you know, telling anything meaningful or, you know, shaping. It's just kind of, you know, we're going to talk to you about how these characters would act together, sharing various enemies, that kind of thing. And I thought it was entertaining. It was worth the read. It was great. It's changed my life. I will say that I have enjoyed, you know, previous iterations maybe a little bit more. You know, like the amalgam books were a lot more enjoyable, and I think the sort of new content versus just, you know, kind of rehashing the character. One of the things that I was thinking about reading this, though, is that I would have enjoyed, maybe they're going to do this in the one that came out this week that I haven't seen yet, but I would love to meet the Spider-Man from different eras that, you know, coincide with Superman. So, like, you know, a 90s era Spider-Man, you know, hooking up with, you know, the Superman that just returns from the, you know, or hooking up with, you know, getting involved in the reign of the Superman and, you know, getting involved with all four guys, you know, claiming to be Superman at the time. I think that's something like that would be fun. And, or, you know, Superman interacting with the clones, right? I think that would be interesting. But this was fine, too.
Yeah, Aaron,
I would so give it a strong B.
You don't so much get that, but one of the things in the more recent one that came out that they did do was a Spider-Man noir with a Superman from that era.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, the old shield, the Superman that leaps instead of flies. I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah.
The one thing I found, like, I've read now both of the crossovers, and they didn't do what they did for, like, the 90s, where they explained them as two separate universes, and they would then have them cross over for each story. And I get that if you're having a lot of short stories, it's easier to just put them in the same world so you don't have to deal with it. But it does kind of take the characters out of, you know, this is a world where both of the characters exist in this world. It's not the DC universe or the Marvel universe exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And so some of that, I like it better when they are separate universes and they get to interact, though I do like when they know each other. So they should have brought back Axis from All Access and from Marvel versus DC. But overall, yeah, I enjoyed this one, the Superman versus Spider-Man, better than I liked Spider-Man versus Superman. Story-wise, I think one of the things that surprised me that I really enjoyed was Gambit showing up in the story that is Mary Jane and Lois.
Mm-hmm.
It felt like 90s cartoon TV having Gambit show up the way he did. And so I enjoyed that.
Especially drawn by Jim Lee.
Yeah. So I enjoyed that quite a bit. I think I like the concept of the team ups better than the actual team ups.
I strongly agree. I like the idea of this book better than the book itself.
Yeah. Like in the Spider-Man Superman one, for example, there is a story that is Gwen Stacy and Lana Lang. That is a really interesting concept, but the actual story itself wasn't good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like this book, because I read this book digitally again this week, and it occurred to me, I never actually finished it when I bought it in print, funny enough. I hadn't read the last few stories. It occurred to me reading this book, though, that I was like, I feel like Marvel and DC are treating these with not the level of respect that they should be. And what I mean by that is we haven't had a Marvel-DC crossover, a legit one, you know, since the Amalgam era. And they're treating these like almost like, you know, like Detective Comics issue 1000 or, you know, Batman issue 500, where it's, you know, you've got your lead story and you've got fun backup tales. And don't get me wrong, it's superstar creative teams, but they're basically being treated as like fun annual type one shots instead of event books. And these are event books and should be treated a little bit more like such, because these are like every story I read, I'm like, well, that was fun. But none of it was like, none of these are going to be remembered in 50 years, like the first Superman, Spider-Man.
You're not going to remember this in a year. I mean, this is candy, right? It's the art is beautiful. I'm no complaints about that. But the stories have no weight to them. There's no stakes to them. There's no you know, craft or turning point. Like, if you were reading a Batman book, you would expect to read a really engaged mystery, right? There's nothing here. That is all I get out of this book. Or, oh, that's an interesting point that was made about the dichotomy between Mary Jane's relationship with Peter, Lois's relationship. You know, I get that. None of this is meaningful. You just had a...
Aaron?
I'm sorry, did I lose you?
You did. You cut out there with... Yeah, you I'm just sorry. Had a...
You just had a nice candy bar, you know?
Yeah.
I found in both books the main story was not my favorite, and it came off as a really bland story that took no risks. Some of the backup stories I thought were far better. but a lot of them, like, so they are like a punchline joke. Some of the most fun I had were the 1- and 2-page stories. The Power Girl blind date with Punisher. I enjoyed that one. I enjoyed seeing Jimmy Olsen dealing with Carnage for like the one page.
Yeah. My favorite story was actually the Spider-Man 2099 and Batman Beyond story. But like but it was annoying because it basically felt like a pitch for a larger book instead of a you know, like a short story. And I was like it ends just as the stuff gets good. I'm like, oh man, that's the book I want to read. And you know, maybe it was, maybe it's a pitch for something that's coming in the future. But yeah,
I tell you, the one that disappointed me that I read the setup for it, I thought was great and I would have loved it, but the story just was bland, was the Ben Parker, Jonathan Kent.
Yeah, like that it was well-drawn, though.
That is a meetup that I wanted to see, but the actual meetup just was, there was nothing to it.
Well, to be fair, they're kind of boring guys in general, right? Like, if you met Ben Parker and Jonathan Kent in person, you'd be like, wow, this guy talks a lot and lectures me a lot. He's not very interesting. Don't so father me, Ben.
Can we talk about a book, though, that I think that maybe, Paul, you and I were both excited about?
We can. We should talk about Absolute Green Lantern number, or excuse me, Green Arrow. Let me correct. Absolute. I was definitely not book. Excited about Absolute Green Lantern. I was psyched for Absolute Green Arrow, written by Porn Sack Pistachio, or Porn Sack.
Porn stash
pistachio with Rafael Albuquerque. And so, you know, if you read the Absolute Evil, I think it was one shot that came out last year, you know that Oliver Queen is dead in the Absolute universe. And so, you know, what this is it's some type of slasher type killer who is taking out people, I guess, who had to do with Oliver Queen's life or Oliver Queen's death, I guess. And Dinah Lance in this universe is a bodyguard who's, you know, the bodyguard for one of these guys. And so she's, you know, kind of, you know, tracking down what's going on with this Green Arrow killer. So, Aaron, I'm very curious what your thoughts are now that this book is out.
I loved this book. I thought this book was outstanding. It is well written. It is well drawn. It is suspenseful and engaging, and it leaves you a ton of questions. It is what I would characterize as a perfect number one issue for a new series. You are drawn into the character of Dinah Lance, who is a policewoman. Who is a she doesn't like what she does, or she's got a lot of questions, and you know, she is involved in this very relationship with Oliver Queen prior to him being killed, and she gets involved in this, and we get to see Large and in Charge Absolute enter at towards the end of the book and just do horrible things, and I love this book. I think its style is, it seems to have a, it is brazenly making comments on our situation. And, you know, I think a lot of people will turn by that, but it reflects the very liberal perspective of, and I think that's key to this book, because that is the key concept between, about Oliver Queen, other than the fact that he's also a super. Right, he has has a lot of problems, you know, cannot help, right? But this book embraces that, and that is still there about this character out front. I love the questions asking, and I'm on this one. What'd you think, Paul?
I thought it was great. I thought it was a really strong start. I think the art by Rafael Albuquerque, you know, he's done a number of books that we've read in the past. You know, like, I think he did some Miller World books and stuff like that. It is really strong. It is, you know, I'd say it's, to your point, it's very suspenseful. Mm-hmm. You know, they kind of have been advertising this as a bit of a slasher type book. I wouldn't necessarily say it's so much a slasher, you know, like a Michael Myers type slasher.
I will say it's edging on horror.
Right. Yeah, but it is edging on horror, but like action horror, I guess, is kind of what, more what I'd say. But it's, you know, Dinah Lance in this universe, very interesting character, very interesting, very strong lead character. I'm genuinely curious who this Green Arrow killer is. You know, we've got some suspects already on the table. You know, you were talking about Sheep Detectives earlier, like who's, you know, it's a bit of a whodunit. You know, we've got Roy Harper, Mia Durden, and Tom Holloway as like some of the suspects. I feel like those are red herrings. I don't feel like it's going to be any of them.
Agreed.
Yeah, you know, your suspects in the first issue are generally not going to be your characters, but you also find out that maybe Ollie was not a good guy in this universe. You know, maybe he was doing some human experimentation. So there's just a lot of mystery in this book, but it is a, you know, you mentioned a perfect first issue. It is a very strong first issue. It is not just set up. It has that, but it also has a ton of action.
Yeah.
A ton of character, you know, development, all within, you know, maybe a slightly oversized book. It is 37 digital pages, but that includes a preview of Superman Father of Tomorrow, which is an Elseworlds book.
It reads super fast.
It does.
I mean, I was like, if this is over already? I mean, I devoured this.
Yeah, I wanted more. I definitely want to know what's next, right? And so I thought that was really strong, which is different than what I can say about one of these next two books, Aaron.
Well, and the last page of Absolute Green Arrow, and I won't say that last page, holy cow. What is Oliver? What was Oliver to? Indeed. I mean, I just, whew, buddy. Can't wait for more. So big thumbs up, Absolute Green Arrow number one. So Paul,
yes,
I'm dying to know which one of these two books that we're going to talk about is the one that you liked versus the one, because I liked one of them, not so much the other.
So Aaron, you know, I was unaware of these two books, both from Image Comics. Odin, written by Marguerite Bennett and James Tynion IV, with art by Letitia. Kadanichi, and then another book from Image Comics, Of the Earth, by Chris Condon, with art by Charlie Atlard. If you're not familiar with Chris Condon, or excuse me, with Charlie Atlard, you know, he was the original artist on The Walking Dead, right? So both new horror books from Image Comics. Aaron's like, hey, you know, creators you like, which I do. Chris Condon also writes That Texas Blood from Image, which is more of a noir book than a horror book. But I was like, yeah, I'll give them both a shot. So I picked up both of these books, and I hated one as much as I loved the other one.
Uh-huh. Same, and I'm just dying to know if it's
I hated Odin.
I loved Odin.
Oh, shit. That's hilarious. No, I hated Odin. And perhaps I was a little sleepy when I read Odin, so I might give another shot.
But I would give it another shot. Yeah.
Yeah, I might. I was like, by the end of Odin, I was like, Jesus Christ, I don't give a shit. But like, Of the Earth, I was like, I was hooked. I was hooked from you know, I turned the first page and I actually was like, I'm not going to read this book, because the first two pages of the book are like an excerpt from a novel. And I was like, I don't know that I want to read prose, but I went in anyway. And I will say, kind of the antithesis of what I just said about Absolute Green Arrow, this first issue is nothing but setup. Like, not, you know, you basically get set up of what's going to happen, or what, you know, of the story. This is the first 15 minutes of a horror movie. You don't really get much other than that. And Odin does have a bit more meat on the bone, I will say, than Of the Earth. It is also 60 something pages, whereas I think Of the Earth is like 41 digital pages. I'm speaking. 39. Oh, they're both the same length, basically. I misread that. But I will say, I don't know. Like, for me, Of the Earth, especially the way they describe it, you know, they are saying Of the Earth will very much be like The Thing, you know, a combination of The Thing and Tremors, and he refers to one more, and Blood Simple. He's like, it's going to be a cross between those three movies. And I'm like, sign me up. I love all three of those movies.
Yeah.
I want that. Odin, I don't know. Odin did not grab me. Again, I was sleepy. Maybe I need to give it another shot, because I really struggled to get through this book. But tell me what your thoughts, you know, because it sounds like you loved Odin and didn't like Of the Earth.
Well, Odin, what I very much enjoyed, you know, Odin is about woman goes undercover to infiltrate the an Aryan white organization, and turns out to be a cult that she's infiltrating, and she gets, you know, fully engaged with them, gets drawn into underground, and then gets cooked. And I loved the turn, and I don't want to ruin anything that happened with this issue, but you know, she is, you know, she becomes, you know, part of a crime. She she gets, you know, sucked in and does a murder. And I really, really enjoyed the turn, and I enjoyed, you know, what it kind of promises going. It's James Tynion the Fourth. I get a kick out of James Tynion the Fourth. I loved the. It is super spooky. I am down for this. Now, as concerns, kind of in the same place you that you were. I'm in the same place that you were with Of the Earth, as you were with Odin. In that, I was really tired when I read it, and I hit that, you know, two pages of just straight prose, and that always takes me out. And I was like, God, they put this in the book, and I felt like that meant that I had to read it, and so I did. And it just left me sort of drained the rest of the book. So I'm going to make you a deal, Paul. I will reread number one if you reread Odin number one, and we both commit to picking up the second issues.
Okay, I can do that.
Let's do it.
Yeah, because I will say I read Of the Earth this morning, so I was much more bright-eyed and bushy-tailed than I was when I read Odin last night after a couple of whiskeys. So I will reread Odin. I will say the thing about prose in comic books is I have to be ready for it, but I actually like it, and I especially like essays at the back of my comic book. And Of the Earth has both. And so, like, when I'm awake and ready for it, like, I was into it. So Odin, I will agree. I'll give Odin another shot if you give Of the Earth another shot. Wayne, yeah. I will tell you right off the bat, do not read Of the Earth.
Okay.
It is very, there is a very, very harsh dog sequence in the book. It is, you know, told for a reason, but it is very hard to read if you are, you know, sensitive to those things. So, you know, for trigger warnings, for those who listen to this podcast that are, you know, dog violence is a trigger for them, do not read Of the Earth.
I feel like just so I can weigh in on my opinion about which of you is right.
Do it.
Wait, would they both come out this week?
Yeah, they came out this week.
I don't have to, because Image, they're both Image books, right?
Correct.
Yeah, so they won't be on the Ichiban. So I guess I could swing by the store and see if they're still on the shelf today. All right.
Yeah. Recommended. Or, Andrew, we do have the preview PDFs from Image Comics themselves, so you can always check it out there, too.
I could. I try not to brag about that. But yes, that is an option as well. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Paul. Yes, sir.
What's coming out next week?
Well, next week in comic shops, we have a couple of decent-sized releases. From DC Comics, we will have Batman issue 163, which is the conclusion of Hush Part 1. And yes, if you're doing the math, we're 11 issues in of the relaunched Batman title. Or how many issues in are we on Batman? I'm sorry. The one that just came out, 9. We're 9 issues in on the relaunched Batman before the previous volume of Batman has finished because of delays. So if you're reading that Hush arc, it finally wraps up next week. We also get the latest issues of Justice League Unlimited, Superman as well, you know, continues the reign of the Superboys. We will also get Superman Father of Tomorrow, which I referred to earlier, which is an Elseworlds title where it is Jor-El that has escaped Krypton and lands in Kansas. So he's the sole survivor of Krypton.
And he's like Father of Tomorrow? Is that what it's...
Father of Tomorrow. Yeah, Superman, Father of Tomorrow.
I am looking forward to it. I've enjoyed the various Jor-El stories that they have been telling over there lately. So I'm enjoying that.
From Marvel Comics, we get Doom Quest, issue 1 of 10, which is a new miniseries that is kind of its own... out of continuity, Dr. Doom story from writer Ryan North, and it's basically it's supposed to be an evergreen Doom story, the perfect introduction and exploration of his character, almost kind of like, you know, Marvel does these things like the Punisher thing from Jason Aaron a few, you know, like last year, that kind of thing. This is kind of what they're trying to say is an evergreen Doctor Doom story. May check out the art on the first issue to see if it's worth picking up. And but the big new release next week that I am very excited to talk to you guys about, Exquisite Corpses issue 13, the final issue of this first arc. They've already announced what comes next, which is a series focused on Rascal Randy. Now, ooh, I'm assuming a prequel, given what has happened to Rascal Randy.
Yes, there's a prequel for Rascal Randy, and then there's also a prequel for Lone Gunman. And then there's another one that's less well-defined, at least I haven't read it. It's been very vague what the third one's going to be.
Yeah, well, and we've got the card game coming out later this year as well. So lots of Exquisite Corpses coming.
I can only hope that they're going to start referring to this as the Exquisite Universe. Like, if they don't use that as for kind of their global term, like Energon Universe for Skybound, they're just missing an opportunity to call it the Exquisite Universe.
Well, hey, we want to know which of your universes are exquisite. Give us a shout at ideologyofmadness@gmail.com. And if we use your comments on the show, you could win a coveted valuable.
And you can just hit us up on social media, IOM Geek on Facebook, Instagram, and X.
What a deal. Well, hey, I'm looking forward to wrapping up Exquisite Corpses with you next week.
Heck yeah.
Absolutely. We'll
catch you then.
I think I'm two issues back. I got to get caught
up. Oh, you got to get caught up, Aaron.
I got to get caught up.
So much has happened.
I think I'm going to reread, once I pick up 13th, I'm going to reread the whole thing from 1 to 13 this coming week.
Wow. Okay. Look at that commitment. Commitment.
I'm very excited.
Yeah, I think I would like to reread it as well, because there are certain points where I had forgotten things between issues.
Yeah, well, there's only two left anyway, so you only need to know those two.
Very good.
All right, we will see you then.
Bye, guys.
Podcast theme music graciously provided by Mark Andrew Pope. For more information, visit markandrewpope.com. Funny Books with Aaron and Polly is a production of ideologyofmadness.com. No Spider-Man clones were harmed in the production of this podcast.